From Defector.com and the Distraction Podcast, it's the lovely and talented David Roth. Hello there, David.
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks. I'm ready for my school vacation. It's one day away. I'm grinding my teeth, hoping I can get there without doing any bodily harm.
Yeah, I was just saying that to Carrie before he came on, that like I kind of like these end of the week slots because it's important for me to be able to see a finish line. Like, if I were talking to you on a Tuesday, there's no telling how dark it could get. But, you know, like, you got one day. How bad could it possibly get?
Well, that's what I tell myself, and thank you for reinforcing that for me. I'm feeling better already. It's just another service you provide.
Do you have any plans for it? I never knew what teachers and administrators did on school vacations. That kind of seemed like it was not my business.
I know. We got some people that are blowing out of here and going to Florida and, you know, islands and things like that. I'm a simple man. I like the fact that I can get up in the morning, walk the dog, drink my coffee on the porch, hang out with my little guy, and not really do much that resembles work.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like I think, you know, when you're a kid and you're sort of imagining what adults do when you're not around, like it's the way that I think, you know, for the longest time, I thought that when my psychoanalyst goes on vacation during the summer, that he's just like on an island with all the other psychoanalysts playing beach volleyball. And that's obviously false. They're just normal people. Like, what else would you want to do but drink coffee on the porch and not have to do anything else?
Right.
That's kind of the American dream right there.
And it's not that I don't like travel, but at this point in my year, that just seems like work.
Yeah, we finally did travel. Like, we have gotten out of the city and just for little, you know, short trips. And it's not, I think that with a lot of this stuff, we talk about this every time I'm on because it's the only thought I have on it. You're sort of like building your muscles back up after 2 years of weariness and in my case, like total inertia. And so just, you know, the 2-day trip that we took to Charleston, South Carolina, which was basically just an eating contest between my wife and I, in which we both were going to finish first in the male and female divisions. Like, that was a very low pressure thing and very low stakes. And yet, like, it still was like we were kind of a little wound up, like getting on an airplane, having to do stuff, like, you know, navigating some other set of norms other than the ones that prevail, like, in the few neighborhoods that we've been in for the last couple of years. Like, we're still kind of getting our feet back under us there, I think.
Oh, no question about that. Well, let's see. Well, what can we talk about first? We're into baseball season, a week or so in. And, I try not to be one of those cranky old guy traditionalist baseball people. There are things about the modern game I like a lot. I'm even in favor of the ghost runner on second base and extra innings. But good God, what was Dave Roberts thinking yesterday?
I think that we know what he was thinking, which was basically, I don't want to be the guy that makes Clayton Kershaw's arm fall off in a game that happens before Easter. Like, I get it. And yet, at the same time, there's something about it that, like, I can't get that angry about it, but it also just seems tacky to me. Like, it seems like, especially given that, you know, Clayton Kershaw, like, there's been a vanishingly small number of perfect games thrown in baseball history. Like, it's like 23 in the history.
Right, out of something like 220,000 games that have been played.
Yeah, and like, Clayton Kershaw has done basically everything that he could do as a player except for that. Like, and I feel like if he, you know, you leave him in until he puts a base runner on, that's fine. Like, how many more pitches could that possibly be? And, you know, give him a chance to do something special. Like, I feel like this is, you know, maybe because no-hitters have, I feel like, become more of a normal presence in the game than I remember them being. It might just be that I grew up as a Mets fan because that organization didn't have a no-hitter until, like, 2012. But there's something about a perfect game to me that feels significant enough that if you are close, you have to go for it. Like, that can't be the sort of thing, you know, it's not about like analytics or pitch counts or whatever. It's like, you know, obviously they've got a broader consideration in terms of trying to keep Kershaw on the mound all year. I get all that. I just feel like some things might be more important than adhering to the letter of the law there.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. Speaking of your Mets, despite all the challenges, look who's in first place today.
Yeah, and as we said, it's almost Good Friday, so who well, they should basically stop the season now.
Well, I think that's what they say. Isn't that the old, you know, if you're in first by Good Friday, there's a pretty good chance you'll be in first by Easter.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think, yeah, even just arithmetically, it would be really hard for them to blow that lead. I've seen them do worse, but in this case, I feel like that's eminently doable. I feel like I've watched them enough now that they have this kind of, like every team that I've watched has this at this point. I'm kind of like, it just doesn't seem like they're totally ready to be playing baseball on TV yet.
Yes, I would agree with that from watching a handful of the Red Sox games so far.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just that it's cold or, you know, that it's been windy or whatever, but it's, and also, I mean, the thing with the Mets that I think the team being what it is, they're also being managed by Buck Showalter, who, you know, hasn't managed a Major League Baseball game in, you know, it's not like a crazy amount of time in human years, but in baseball years, it's the sort of thing where it's real unfrozen caveman lawyer hours in terms of bullpen management and stuff. And I think that there's that learning curve, watching that in real time and watching it unfold while a bunch of guys haplessly give up consecutive doubles to members of the Washington Nationals, that took a lot more out of me than I would have expected. Like, I like to think I got perspective on this stuff, but, like, it turns out I don't.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. How about this guy, the Reds president and CEO? Is it Phil Catalini? Oh, my.
He's, yeah, really powerful stuff. Phil Castellini, in what I think was, like, the more I think about it, kind of a triumph of sports talk radio interviewing, is being interviewed by the guys that do, you know, the local Reds broadcasts. And he had said a bunch of times, you know, people are complaining because the Reds basically spent the little bit of time in the offseason before the lockout and then immediately after the lockout just dumping every veteran that they could. You know, and not even expensive ones. I mean, it's like Tucker Barnhart and Wade Miley and Sonny Gray, guys that every baseball team can afford. And they jettisoned all of them. And then afterward, Castellini was more or less, you know, saying the things that every owner says after they do stuff like that, you know, in terms of prioritizing their, you know, discipline and having to be realistic about payroll and developing our own talent. And what these guys did on the radio, which is impressive because it's not something that I don't generally associate with this type of like team broadcast show. They just asked him enough follow-ups on that that eventually he said what he actually meant, which was, we don't want to spend more money. What are you going to do? Not watch the games? It was, and this is opening day. Cincinnati has a parade on opening day. They've done it for 100 years. The town is gonzo for this team. And he was basically like chastising the piggies for criticizing the slop. And it's not, you know, like, he's not the only sort of second-generation rich kid dingus that's steering a team into a ditch while everybody yells at him. Like, the Yankees have, you know, younger Steinbrenners doing it. But with Castellini, what was amazing about it, and I really recommend, I mean, you don't want to listen to the whole interview. It's like 15 minutes, but it's 15 minutes of some blowhard yelling at sports talk radio guys, is the how quickly the sort of like executive mumbo jumbo that you usually get on stuff like this, like just how readily that slides into like more or less taunting, but also kind of threatening fans. Like the idea of being like, if we sold the team, somebody would move. So like, you're stuck with us. Also stop complaining. It bothers me. Like that is 30 seconds away via follow-up question from letting someone do the usual stuff that you hear, for instance, the Angelos kid doing with the Orioles.
We'll come back to blowhards a little bit later in our conversation, but I
wouldn't be, that's what I'm here for. That's my specialty.
But I want to veer to the NBA for a moment because our feisty little team that could, those Boston Celtics, gearing up to take on the evil empire that is those powerhouse Brooklyn Nets who don't care to play defense or use substitutions.
The Nets are such a strange team. I was talking to somebody about this earlier in the week, but like, I think that they are, I can't say that they're not an NBA title contender because they have Kyrie Irving and they have Kevin Durant, and Kyrie's playing better than I think I've ever seen him play. Like, there's a lot of talent there, and yet the team absolutely does not pass the eye test, makes zero sense. And every time I watch them, there's like two new guys that I thought were retired who are playing significant minutes on the team. Like, if you're curious about like what Paul Millsap is up to, or like if you think you haven't seen LaMarcus Aldridge recently and you were worried about him, like that's as much an argument for watching the Nets as anything else. Like, it is really just a pack of 2013-14 Topps basketball cards opened at random as soon as you get into the bench. The Celtics, to me, seem, and from moment to moment, like the best team in the East. Maybe the Bucks are better. But the Nets are still kind of scary. I mean, they look great against Cleveland. I don't think Cleveland's that good. But the Nets certainly could beat anybody on any given night. I also feel like they could, you know, absolutely be swept out of this series and be arguing the entire time. That seems roughly as likely to me.
Is it wrong that I took some sort of perverse pleasure in watching the Lakers implode?
No. I mean, that was, and I say this as somebody who's, like, admired LeBron, enjoyed LeBron. What a mess that whole thing was. And it was bad vibes the entire season, you know, like all of it in terms of the way that Russell Westbrook collapsed was, you know, it was interesting enough sort of early, and then it was just sad. And the inability to kind of change gears there, you know, I think that there's a certain type of great player that is capable of sort of downshifting and the back end of a career. And those guys, I mean, like Grant Hill did it. He had a great career after he lost the ability to jump, basically. Like Vince Carter played for 10 seasons after you saw him dunking in games and was good in all of those seasons. But there's this other type of sort of like alpha scorer guy. Iverson did not have that back end to his career. And Westbrook, I mean, Iverson did not exactly like go out on top. Westbrook is just absolutely going to go out being Russell Westbrook. I don't think that there's any indication there that he feels like he needs to change anything. And he needs to change a lot. You know, like there's certainly the tools there, but like to see how uninterested he is on defense, and also to see, I mean, like just the, I don't know if there's like something wrong with his eyes or whatever. Like I'm saying this in seriousness. Like, I don't understand how a player that's as good as him misses shots the way that he misses them. You know, he missed 35% of his dunk attempts this year.
Wow.
Like, what is going on? Like, how does that even happen? So there's something, I don't know. I mean, maybe when it's all said and done, I'll feel sadder about it. But there was a part of me that was kind of, when I was watching it, like, it was like a, just a very obvious sort of, like serial tragedy where every game is sort of just being like, what, try passing. And they're like, no, it's my tragic flaw that I hate passing. And then that just happened 82 times.
All right, back to Blowhard. So Elon Musk today says, I don't know, I might just buy Twitter. When I hear Elon Musk or any of these guys, I don't see them. I see Ned Beatty's character in Network.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that guy was a way more charismatic presenter than Elon. I mean, I think that the scene that we're, you know, we're talking about, which basically won Beatty an Oscar for what's effectively a one-scene role in that movie, is, you know, not a subtle scene, but it is absolutely a winning pitch. Like, you know, it's a man basically making a impassioned plea and or extremely dangerous seeming threat on behalf of the broader capitalist order in Ned Beatty's voice. And then when you see Musk doing it, it's like, I think the thing that I keep forgetting from moment to moment with him every time he sort of like bubbles up in one of these little things is just how whack he is, like just what a lame he is.
Yes, to both. Like, yeah.
Whatever it is he's good at, like it's not, he's just, he can't stop like making 420 jokes and just like basically acting like sort of a replacement level like Reddit guy. And I know he's not, like he's clearly gotten some big things right, but like this is not, I don't think this is exactly him playing to his strengths. But I don't know if you saw the latest development in Elon's takeover gambit. Is that one of the other big shareholders in Twitter said earlier that they would not accept the offer, that they believe that it's too low relative to Twitter's potential for growth. So that would seem to nip it in the bud. It's all very inspiring. That stockholder is Prince Al-Waleed of the Saudi Arabian royal family.
Oh, dear.
Which also owns a bunch of money in Twitter. So there's really not a lot of guys to cheer for here.
Man, oh man. Well, and then another guy not to cheer for, playwright, screenwriter David Mamet, who, you know, was great in the 80s when swearing was really edgy, but I feel like
he invented cursing.
Yeah. But now he seems to have gone the way of all of these completely isolated rich guys.
it's a really weird thing too, because I think his work has gone downhill, but like, this is true of all of us. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the thing that happens as you get older, like, I just, at this point, like, there's no blog that I would prioritize over, like, a really nice nap. And I'm not even that old yet. It's just sort of how I am. But with Mamet, when you look at the stuff that he wrote that I admire most, and I know you have, like, a theater background, too. Like, you like Glengarry Glen Ross.
I love, right? Glengarry Glen Ross. I was in a production of Speed the Plow. That was a blast.
Yeah. I mean, these are great plays. And I think that, you know, it's easy to sort of goof on them as being like, you know, he's the guy that invented having guys in suits curse at each other. Like, I know, I just made that goof. But there's a critique there. And like Glengarry Glen Ross, it's about the way that not just working for a living, but the way that like being at the bottom of a power structure that doesn't care about you makes you less than you might otherwise be. Mm. Like, it makes you a worse person, a more desperate person, and a more dishonest person. This, to me, is not the sort of argument that, if subjected to any amount of pressure, has somebody come out the other end as just an absolute garden variety Republican dunce. And yet, that is where Mamet seems to be at this point. And I, from everything I've read about it, it's that, like, some of it is, you know, a guy that gets divorced enough times winds up taking on some bad ideas about how men and women are supposed to relate. There's all, you know, stuff that you just sort of see happening. But it seems like a lot of it is that he just got into listening to conservative talk radio. And somehow the guy that was smart enough to write all these great plays is also dumb enough to be impressed by, like, Mark Levin.
Wow.
And so he really, like, wound up coming all the way around on this stuff. And so the clip that was circulating earlier was him on Mark Levin's show on Fox talking about how teachers are groomers and men are predators by nature. All the stuff that is, like, if you look at it out of context, is patently insane and disgusting on its face. Nonsense. And yet it's the sort of thing where if you were to submerge yourself in that bog of media every day, that's just the normal stuff there. He's just saying Mark Levin's lines back to him while Levin sits there with his eyes closed waiting for him to stop. And I would have hoped for a more dignified endgame for David Mamet than that. He wrote too many good things for that to be the way he goes out.
Yeah, but then again, his buddy is Bill Macy, who, along with his wife, were doing whatever they could to make sure their little spawn got into the college of their choice.
It's such a weird thing, though, the idea of, like, all of these guys. I mean, I know that the Alec Baldwin character from the movie of Glengarry Glen Ross is not in the play, but the idea that all of these guys that have memorized these lines, acted in all these plays, and William H. Macy's done, you know, like, he's like, him and Joe Mantegna are, like, the two Mamet guys. Mm. The idea that you do all those plays and then you come out of it at the end and you're like, I think the Always Be Closing guy has some really good points.
Right. He's the one I like to emulate. Yes.
It's just depressing. What a betrayal that is. Like, did they just memorize the sounds, like the lines phonetically, and they never noticed what the words were saying?
It's another lesson from the year 2022. David, we thank you so much as always. Hope you have a good weekend. I hope there's a real good nap in there for you somewhere.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And may your vacation be as restful as possible.
Thank you. We'll catch you again soon.
Yep. Take care, guys. Bye.
David Roth of Defector and the Distraction Podcast on Downtown.